सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सहवीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः। हरिः ॐ श्रीगुरुभ्यो नमः। हरिः ॐ। Last week we covered two verses because we did the revision of the chapter, and we saw 18 and 19 where it was said that once the mind of the yogi or the yogi himself becomes nispraha, means gives up the longing for desires, longing to enjoy a desire which has been already enjoyed, and gives up sarva kamebhya, so all desires as well, then he is said to be yukta. Yukta means fit. Here it means he is capable, and he is then capable of chittam atmani eva avatishtate. Then his mind is said to be joined or can stay with the self, or is in the self, or actually truly speaking, not stay in the self, because then that would be like self is different and mind is different. It recognizes itself to be the self. That is what is meant. And then the mind of the yogi was compared to a flickerless lamp. So a flickerless the flame of a lamp which is kept in a windless place does not flicker because the winds are not there. Same way, because the desires are not there, because earlier the verse said that he has given up all his desires. In our case, the winds, the desires are the winds. And those winds, those desires are the ones which make the mind flutter. The mind flickers because of the desires, because the desires are pulling the mind in every direction. And therefore, the mind of the yogi who has become yukta, who has given up all the desires, is compared to a flickerless flame. If you see a flame where there is no air, breeze, fan, etc., it will be absolutely unmoving. Please also remember, though, that it is changing. It is not unchanging. It is changing. Like I told you last time, the wick is every moment the wick, which is the part of the wick which is burning, is different. And every moment there is a different drop of oil which is being burned. So each moment the flame is different. Okay. And here what is happening with the yogi is not like each moment his mind is different. There is actually no mind. So there is no mind. There is only the self. Okay, so that is the comparison. Then we go on to the, we take the next three verses together. We read them together. Yatro paramate chittam niruddham yoga sevaya yatra chaivatmanatmanam pashyannatmanitushrati sukham atyantikam yattada buddhigrayam matindriyam veti yatranashchaivayam stitaschalati tatvatah yam labdhva chaparam labham manyate nadhikam tatah yasmin stitona dukhena gurunapi vichalyate. So these three verses are the result of verse 18. Once he has no spraha, no longing and no desires as well, then what happens? What is the next step? That is what now Bhagwan is explaining in these three verses, and therefore we take them together. When the mind restrained by the practice of yoga attains quietude, and when seeing the self by the self, he's satisfied in his own self. You see there are dot, dot, dots. It's a continuation. He's satisfied in his own self. Okay, then what? Then the next is, then he, the yogi, feels that infinite bliss result. See, it's a step forward. So when the mind, when he's satisfied in his own self, then he feels that infinite bliss, which can be grasped by the pure intellect and which transcends the senses, wherein established he never moves from the reality. Then what? So what? What happens then? Which, having obtained, Bhagwan says, he thinks there is no other superior to it, wherein established he is not moved even by heavy sorrow. That is the result. This is what Bhagwan is now explaining. Okay, Bhagwan, I will try and control my desires. I will reduce them or control them. Then what? What will happen? So this is what Bhagwan says. So yatra uparamate chittam niruddham. So when we take the verse 20, yatra, when? Uparamate, uparati word, if you remember from Tattva Bodh, it is one of the qualifications of a seeker, is withdrawal. Okay, so in this uparamate or uparati, same meaning, withdrawal, what we are trying to do is avoid habitual thought formation. Our mind is actually, it's a slave to habits. Habitually, it keeps running into different objects, time, space, and objects. It keeps running in all three directions. So when that is curtailed, it is known as uparam. In Tattva Bodh, when we studied it and we said withdrawal, the one definition of uparati which was given there was to stay steadfast in one's own duty, if you can remember that. So when we say steadfast, and now we are saying no habitual thought formation, it's one and the same. That is at the gross level, that because Tattva Bodh is a beginning text. Right? And the qualifications of a seeker, suddenly at the beginning, first day, you cannot tell the seeker that now the mind should not be forming habitual thought, mind should not go into habitual thought formation. You can't tell that the person is not going to be able to do it. So what he's told is, stay steadfast in your own duty, which means that you will not unnecessarily engage in things which do not concern you. And the less we engage in things, the less thoughts have to be there, right? If I have 100 friends, I will have 100 thoughts about the 100 friends. But if I bring that down to 5 or 10 or 1 or 2, then I'm not concerned about the rest of the 99. You understand? So automatically, when there is withdrawal in the external world, there has to be a reduction in thought inside. And so there it was told, and that is also very, very correct and true, but it is at a different level. That's what needs to be understood. So a withdrawal from unnecessary engaging in things which do not concern me. Unnecessary, if it is not my duty, do not get involved in it. That will help in this yatra uparamate. That will help in that habit, not forming habitual thoughts. You know, like it's gotten into a habit. The mind is habituated to thinking and in all kinds of directions. So that'll help when I try to withdraw from the external world externally. And because it is at a gross level, it is easier than this. Understand that this instruction now is to a person who has done karma yoga and everything. That instruction is a person who has not even heard karma yoga. He has just come and he's saying, okay, what is this Vedanta and what should I do? How should I qualify? So that's where he's being told. Okay. And now this uparam is now the thought. So there's no question about body withdrawal has already been done because we are sitting in the seat of meditation. So this is not gross. This is subtle. All right, because this is instructions for meditation, means obviously you have found a solid, we saw all the instructions, find a solitary place and sit in quietude and this and that, and don't let anything disturb you, etc. All that has been done. So when this, when the mind is not allowed to go into habitual thought forming, chittam niruddham, niruddham means bringing it to a grinding halt. When I was reading this, two things came to my mind. One is, you know, when you're driving and suddenly somebody comes in front of you, or you're driving and it's green light, but suddenly now it's turning red, orange, and then you brake really hard. So you bring the car to a grinding halt. That is what is meant by chittam niruddham. And if, I don't know if other than Abhimanyu, anybody has heard Gurudev's meditation tapes. One of his meditations in one of the tapes, what he did was, he chanted Om loudly for like a minute or two. Om, 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 like really loud, loud, loud. And suddenly he stopped. That is what he's trying, this chittam niruddham, that is what was being tried there. So what happens is the mind is now first focused only on Om, like from many, many thoughts, it is brought to one thought. So there is a uparam, withdrawal, right? There is a withdrawal from other thoughts, because that is the whole idea of meditation, is to have one single thought, and that thought has to be of Om or pure consciousness or Ishta Devata or whoever. So that one thought is there, and that thought is repeated, and because even that thought, it is a thought and it has to be dropped. In the seat of meditation, even the thought I am Brahman has to be dropped. I am Brahman is the highest. If you're meditating on a form, Krishna and all that, then that also has to be dropped, right? So that is what is meant by chittam niruddham, mind brought to a grinding halt. That is when all the thoughts will cease. The minute all the thoughts cease, the mind recognizes itself to be the self. That is the idea. Okay, so chittam niruddham yoga sevaya. Yoga here again, once again, the mind is not allowed. So when we say the mind is not allowed, what does it mean? That means what? The mind is ordered, is told to stay on one thought. And when it is told to stay on one thought, that becomes contemplation. That is not thinking. Contemplation is when the mind thinks only of one particular thought. And yoga sevaya means I have control over my mind. I tell my mind, this is the thought that we need to contemplate on right now. No other thoughts are going to be allowed. So first concentration into one thought and then dropping that thought as well. Chittam niruddham. Complete quietude, uparam, then bringing the mind to a grinding halt by telling it that you're not allowed to run in any of the three directions. Three directions are space, time, and objects. You're not allowed to run. You have to stay at one spot. Okay? And that is what. Then what happens? Yatra chaiva atmanatmanam pashyannatmani tushati. Then what happens when the mind is brought to a grinding halt? It only sees the self. Why? Because there is only self. There is nothing else. Right? Even the thoughts are false, but the mind is thinking it is real. So the mind is engaging in all these different kinds of thoughts. Now it has been withdrawn and the thought formations have been stopped. Like other thought formations are out of the question. Now only one thought is being contemplated upon, and now even that thought is now dropped. So the minute that happens, what remains is only the self. So the mind has no choice. So it says it sees the self by the self, means there's no seeing. Please understand. The seeing means again, there is a duality. No. There is no duality. There's nothing but the self. What remains is only the self. And then tushati. Tushati means extreme contentment. The mind feels extreme. Right now, our contentment is only when I get something or I see something or I hear some music which I like. It is a dependent contentment. Here what happens is in its own self, it becomes content. Because it is full. Why? Contentment is what is, I have explained this to you before also. Contentment doesn't mean that the person is rich or anything. Contentment means that whatever this person has, he thinks it's quite a bit. So he may have a little hut also, but he'll say, oh, I have a big house. That is content. Not having a big house. Actually, more things you have, you're still not contented. You want even more and more and more. So that is what contentment is. Now what has happened is he has actually gained that real fullness. Because the real fullness is only in the self. And the mind has recognized itself to be completely full. Now what it will have? Why don't I have contentment? Is because I think I'm not full. I think I'm incomplete. I don't have this. I don't have that. I don't have enough clothes. I don't have enough room. I don't have enough this, whatever, money, etc., etc. That is what is discontent. That's why I feel, even if I have, I feel I don't have enough and I'm discontented. Now the real fullness has been gained by the mind. How can it not be content? So this is the, then what happens? Okay, then the mind feels content. Then what, Bhagwan? So what? Okay, mind feels content. So what? So when the mind experiences that full contentment, sukham atyantikam, atyantikam yatat buddhi grayam atindriyam, means he obtains sukham atyantikam means extreme, infinite. Atyantika means non-dependent. Atyantika means in spite of. Right now, our sukha or happiness or bliss or no, not bliss, whatever we experience, not bliss, it's happiness only, is a dependent happiness. It is dependent on the senses and the objects. If my eye sees some color that I like, I'm happy. If my eye sees something that I don't like, I'm unhappy. So there is a dependency on the eyes. And by eyes, I mean all the sense organs and its respective field of operation. So eyes in the field of operation of color and form, ears in sound, tongue in taste, etc., right? Smell in smell odors, and then touch. So soft touch, I feel skin feels happy with a silky touch. Otherwise, if it touches a thorn, it is. So the sukha, the happiness that I am experiencing right now, we cannot call it as atyantika, though we say, oh, I was so happy to see you. I was dying to. It is not atyantika. I can only say it is, I am very happy. You know, I'm very happy that I got this. I'm very, very, or very, very happy. And no. That's not very, very anything. Atyantika is only when it is not dependent. And here in this state, when he has brought this mind to a grinding halt, when he has withdrawn, when there is no thought, when the self is recognized, when the mind has recognized itself to be the self, the mind itself is the self. Please understand, there's no difference between mind and self. Okay, the only reason we call two different words is self is without thoughts and mind is self with thoughts. That's it. So self, mind minus thought is equal to self. That is the equation. So this atyantikam sukham, and also for us, the sukha that we experience is can be sattvic, rajasic or tamasic. See, every night when I go into deep sleep, I am experiencing sukha. There is no doubt about it. I feel very happy that I had a good night's rest. That is tamasic sukha though. Okay, rajasic is when I come in contact with objects, when I see movies, when I have go for parties, when I go for a performance, etc., etc. And sattvic is when my mind is quiet and when I'm studying. When I do reading, any kind of reading falls under sattvic sukha, like higher reading. I'm not trash, but any higher reading, if you do, it is coming out of sattva because you know you feel that peace of mind. Okay, so this atyantikam sukha is not even sattvic sukha, please understand, because the self is beyond sattva as well. So Om in our chart is beyond the three gunas, and so when that is recognized, we transcend the gunas, and when we transcend the gunas, or then only it is atyantika. Okay, so sukham atyantikam, a non-dependent bliss. Therefore, then it is called bliss. It is not called happiness, because happiness is the opposite of sorrow. When sorrow is not there, I'm happy. When happiness is not there, I'm sorrow. Bliss is beyond happiness and sorrow. So this bliss is experienced. It is not dependent on the objects or the senses, and it is not dependent on the gunas. It is not because of the gunas, because some sattvic guna came up and no, there's no gunas there. And then it is buddhi grayam, buddhi intellect, grayam, grasp. That which can be grasped by the intellect. Now, this buddhi grayam word has been used by Bhagwan to indicate to us that it is not a bliss that is experienced in deep sleep. Because in deep sleep, remember that the intellect is folded. It is sleeping. The mind is sleeping. And the intellect during the deep sleep is not aware of the happiness. It becomes aware only after waking up. So in the past, it becomes aware that last night I had a good night's sleep and I feel rested. But during while experiencing that happiness, the intellect doesn't know. So the sukha, the happiness that is experienced in deep sleep, is buddhi agrahyam. Agrahyam means not grasped by the intellect, whereas this one, that's why the word buddhi grahyam has been used to indicate that the yogi has not fallen asleep. Oh, then maybe he was asleep and that's why he's feeling the sukham atyantikam, you know, because of course, understand that even in deep sleep, it is not dependent on the objects and it is not dependent on the gunas. Right? There are no objects. Senses are all folded. There is no TV or anything to see or hear. I'm in deep sleep. So the senses and the objects are, so it is, deep sleep also is not dependent on senses and objects. And it is not also dependent on the gunas, because if whole my subtle body is asleep, then the gunas are not at play. Then what is the difference then? That's also, why can't we call it sukham atyantikam? We cannot call it sukham atyantikam because the intellect is not aware of it. That is the difference. Okay, so understand that difference, that the intellect is not available to avail of that bliss, whereas in samadhi, in this turiya state, which this yogi has experienced because of chitta niruddham and yoga sevaya, the intellect is there. It is aware of this bliss. While the bliss is being experienced, there is an awareness. That is the difference between deep sleep and samadhi. And atindriyam, I already told you, atindriyam means it's beyond the senses, means it is not dependent on the senses because the senses are all folded. We already said uparam, we said body, senses, everything, there is a withdrawal from the pranas, the mind, etc., etc. So the senses are also not functioning. See, deep sleep sukha also is atindriyam, please understand. It is atindriyam, it is beyond the senses, but it is not buddhi grahyam, it is buddhi agrahyam, and that's why there is the difference. Veti yatra chaivayam stitas chalati tatvataha. Wherein established, now he never, having reached in chapter 15, Bhagwan will say, having reached there, no one comes back. Okay, once this bliss is experienced, this reality is experienced, Bhagwan guarantees us that it is a point of no return. To distinguish this post from the other higher post, which some people consider higher, like the heavens. The seven higher worlds are considered, a great achievement, and people actually strive to gain the heavens, etc., etc. But then what is the difference? That is a point of return, and this is not a point of return. And that's why this is mentioned. Sitas chalati tatvataha. Sitas achalati means he will not move from there. Chalati is charadhatu, to move. So once you reach, imagine the state, you know, if you're like completely content, why would you want to move from there? And that's what we see in Raman Maharshi's life, etc. He experienced it for a few, minutes. When he was 16, he just left everything and went off. So imagine the happiness, content that it must have. Taittiriya Upanishad, they give a very good description. They say that if a person is very healthy, very handsome, very wealthy, he owns the entire earth, it seems. Okay? Because they're giving units of happiness. So they start off the unit, one unit of happiness they say is when a person is handsome, healthy, wealthy. I mean, he's owning the entire earth. And healthy also. See, you can own the entire earth, but you may be sick and dying. No, not sick and dying. He's very healthy, he's very young. Okay, you may be ugly looking. No, he's extremely handsome. And owns the entire, that is one unit of happiness. They say this sukham atyantikam is like 1,000 or like 10,000 or 100,000 greater than that. So just to give us a comparative idea, one unit of happiness is owning the entire earth, having all the health, beauty, handsome, whatever, all, everything having is one unit. Then this happiness is 1,000 times, or it says 100,000 or some such thousands of times greater. So imagine if I get that, do you think I want to move from there? Can't. We have not experienced it, but that's the idea. So that's why he says that having gained there, this sthita, having established himself in the self, he will not move. Then what happens? Okay, he doesn't move. So what? Then what? Then Bhagwan says, then once he obtains that, he comes to know that there's nothing more superior to this. Will I not come to know that? I told you, what is one unit of happiness? Taittiriya Upanishad is saying, if I'm getting that, which is infinite times greater, you think I'll think there's anything superior than that? And then what? So what if I get it? He will never be moved by heavy sorrow. Because he doesn't move, period. And the reason he doesn't move is because he's full. It's like saying space. Can space move? The space is everywhere. Can space move anywhere? My hand can move in space, but can I push space away? I can't touch space. Space cannot move. So this is even subtler than space. Brahman reality is even holding space. Now I have become one with that entire full Brahman. How will I move? What will move me? Nothing can move me. And therefore Bhagwan says, na dukhena gurunapi vichalyate. He does not move even nothing. The heaviest sorrow cannot move him from that position. Okay. So these three are the results of, like, why should I meditate? What should I, why should I do this? Is this. So this 22, 23 are Phalashruti. They give the result. All right. Any questions before we go further? No? Okay. So now Bhagwan gives a definition of yoga. The word yoga we have heard many, many times, and many, many times I have given you the same definition, because it comes from the root yuj, to join. So yoga is something which joins us to the higher. Now he's giving a different definition of yoga, and this is, it has to be taken in a negative way. So we will see that. Tam vidya dukha sanyoga viyogam yoga sangitam sanishchayena yoktavyaha yogo nirvinna chetasa. Let that be known. What should we know? The severance from the union with pain is yoga. This yoga should be practiced with determination and with a mind steady and undespairing. Okay. So, see this third word, tam vidyad. Tam vidyad means come to know. Please understand. Dukkha sanyoga viyoga. Dukkha sorrow. Sanyoga is, samyoga means joining. Samyoga, samyak yoga. So, samyak yukta. So, joining. And viyoga is separation, severance. Okay, so Bhagwan is saying, what, know that to be yoga, which is a separation, or which is a disassociation from association with sorrow. You understand? Okay, association from sorrow, there should be a disassociation from association with sorrow. This is the definition of yoga. This is what Bhagwan is saying here. Dukkha sanyoga yoga. Now, how will I disassociate myself from association with sorrow? So we need to know what sorrow is first, because sorrow is different for different people. You know, a person who mutual funds go down, there is sorrow for people. They say, I lost so much, my shares go down. I say, oh my God, I lost so much money. There is also sorrow. So what is the definition of sorrow? Sorrow is only a thought, actually. It is only in the mind. There is nothing, sorrow, there is nothing tangible. It is a thought. So what we have so far studied is withdrawal from thought is what we have studied. So if we can achieve a withdrawal from thought, see, the point is that when I say I'm very, very sorrowful, 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 when I fall asleep, when I go into deep sleep, do I feel that sorrow? Do I feel any pain in the body? Swami Swarupananji was very ill when he was very young. He used to be extremely ill. He had this condition and very, very painful condition. And so he asked Gurudev, he said, you know, Gurudev, you do say that I'm not the body, I'm not the body. But, you know, when the pain comes, I have to bear it, right? And Gurudev just said to him, where is the pain in deep sleep? Where is the pain in deep sleep? Which means that only when you associate with the body, there is pain. If you disassociate yourself from the body, there cannot be any pain. Is this understood? Everybody is very silent. Huh? So if there's something which is not clear, please unmute yourselves and unmute your video also and whatever, and then let me know. So the point is that only when I identify with the body, only when I identify with the mind, I will feel pain. Because in deep sleep, when I disidentify with the body, what is happening in the deep sleep is, do I know that I am a woman in deep sleep? Do I know that I am a mother? Do I know that I am rich? Do I know that I am poor? I'm sleeping on a bed or sleeping on a floor. When I'm in deep sleep, do I know whether I'm in my own home or in somebody else's home? Which means that I have disassociated from the body. Because if I had association with the body, I should know everything. I should know that I'm a female. I should know that I'm a mother. I should know that this is not my bed. This is somebody else's bed. This is somebody else's house. Everything I should know. If I have not disassociated with the mind, I should know that, you know, I have so much mutual fund sitting there. I have this property, that property. I have this happiness. I have this sorrow. All that I should know in deep sleep. Therefore, in deep sleep, disassociation is happening from the mind and the body. And at that time, we do not feel anything. That time, this dukkha sanyoga vyoga is happening. But what Bhagwan is saying here is that is okay. In deep sleep, it happens. But when you wake up, all that sanyoga is coming to you again, right? Immediately, you identify with the body, the pain starts. You identify with the mind, sorrow starts, happiness starts, whatever, worries, whatever there is, you know, like, oh, I have to do so much tomorrow, this many, whatever it starts. Whereas this dukkha sanyoga vyoga here is the once the person goes into samadhi, means the first three verses, like the previous three verses, he is done a permanent dukkha sanyoga vyoga. Because he has disassociated himself from the mind permanently. And so this thing has to be practiced. So how do I practice? Practice meditation. Practice withdrawal from thought. Because what Bhagavan is saying is, saha nishchayena yoktyavya. Nishchayena is determination. Nishchay is a determination. Like I'm doing nishchay that I will go here tomorrow, that, right? I'm doing a firm resolve. So he says, with this firm resolve, with firm determination, this yoga should be practiced anirvinna chetasa. Anirvinna chetasa means, there is a story to describe this anirvinna. See, there was a bird, it seems, and the bird lay eggs on the beach and she went off, you know, the mother went off somewhere. In the meanwhile, there was high tide or whatever, and then the eggs were swept away into the ocean. So the bird came back and her eggs were not there. So she said to the ocean, you return my eggs because you took my eggs, my babies. So the ocean did not return the eggs. Of course not. So she said, I am going to dry you up. So the bird was carrying one drop of ocean water in a beak and bringing it and putting it on the beach. One drop. So apparently Naraji was passing by there and he saw this and he said, what are you doing? She said, the ocean has taken my eggs, my babies. I'm going to empty the ocean and find my eggs. So Naraji was very impressed, extremely impressed. So he said, I am now going to send you help, Garud Bhagwan. So he invoked Garud Bhagwan. Garud Bhagwan came and then Garud Bhagwan threatened the ocean that if you do not return the eggs, we will dry you up. I will dry you up. Now it is Garud, it is Bhagwan, it's the vehicle of Bhagwan Vishnu. So the ocean immediately, it seems, brought the eggs and gave. That is what anirvinna chetasa means, extreme determination. Try to dissociate yourself from thought. And that is when this dukkha sanyoga, because that is the greatest yoga, Bhagwan is saying, this is the greatest of my, it's written in my father's handwriting. This is my father's book that I have. Greatest definition of yoga. That is what he has written. This is his writing, not mine. That this, if we can achieve this yoga, that actually achieving this yoga means achieving samadhi only, very honestly speaking. But even in our day-to-day life, if we can dissociate and think about it, you know, like, honestly, you know, like I told you last time also that I have moved, but things are, it's been very stressful for me. So things are not going as smoothly as I would have liked them to go. Something, they are getting solved, but that, so the stress is there constantly. But when I'm not thinking about it, when I go to the gym, I forget about it. There is dukkha vyog, no stress is there. Then I come home and I look, then again it comes. Or I'm falling asleep, so in sleep I don't feel anything. Then when I wake up, this is that kind of thing, right? So this is the definition of yoga that Bhagwan is giving here. Dukkha sanyoga vyoga. Okay, so disassociate. Remember this word, very important. Dukkha sanyoga vyoga. There's one more thing that came to my mind. To see, when we were studying in Sandipani, Guruji had his bypass. And because he had his bypass for 6 weeks, he was in the ashram. He had to rest. And every evening he would take satsang for us and all the people also would come, outside people. They knew that, because then what the reason he decided, he said, then whole day I don't want people coming, because then he had to rest. So he said, every evening I will come and I will do satsang for 1 hour. Whoever wants to meet me should come there. And we students, of course, we also go. So in that, there was one topic he was talking about, Satchit Ananda, and what are the manifestations of that, etc. But one thing what he said was, he said, do you know why people don't come to Vedanta? Because every center is complaining of that, right? People don't come for lectures. People don't come for lectures. Even in India, it is the same thing. Compared to the population of India, very few people are coming for Vedanta. So he said, do you know why? So everybody's like, yeah, why? Because they like sorrow, he said. And I didn't understand only at that. Honest to God, it took me 2 years to understand what he said. Because he did not explain himself. He said, people like sorrow, they don't want to get out of sorrow, and that is why they don't come for Vedanta. Now that thing really bothered me, because I'm like, do I like sorrow? Like, what is he talking about? So I asked all my fellow students, and people gave me all various answers. One lady said, oh, I love to see sorrowful movies, like sad movies. I said, I don't. And then somebody said something, and somebody said something. Then the course finished. But that thing stayed with me, right? I'm like, how? What does he mean by saying people like sorrow? If I ask any one of you, you like sorrow? You like to have pain in your body? Are you going to say yes? So how people like? So anyway, so I came back to Canada and this thought was going on and on and on in my mind. And I asked, and finally Swami Shantananji came. And I said, Swamiji, this is what's been bothering me for the last 2 years. I've left Sandipani, but this thing doesn't go, because Guruji said people don't come to Vedanta lectures because they like sorrow. And Swamiji said, look in chapter 6. Dukkha sayoga vyoga, you look. So the idea, what he means is sorrow is attachment. Attachment is sorrow. People don't like sorrow, but they love to get attached. The minute anything happens, we get attached. We get attached to friends. We get attached to circumstances. We get attached to the bed. We get attached to the pillow. We get attached to, you name it, clothes, movies, you name it. We get attached. And that we like very much. What we don't realize is that attachment is what is causing sorrow, is going to cause sorrow. And that is what is meant when he says, people like sorrow. If I say, do you like sorrow? You will say no. But are you attached to your children, your house and all? Yes. That means you're attached to sorrow. And do you like that? We like it. It gives us happiness. Oh, such joy when I hug my cat. Oh, such joy when I hug my child, right? It's attachment. It's sorrow. Because one day that cat is going to go. Right? One day that object is, circumstance is going to change. Things are going to change and it's going to cause sorrow. That is what this is, Dukkhasa Yoga Vyoga. And that's why Bhagavan is saying, practice it anirvinna chetasa, with firm determination, practice this Vyoga. So the actual practice of Vyoga, actual dissociation, has to be with attachment. In our day-to-day life for householders, there has to be dissociation from attachment. If you want disassociation from sorrow, you must disassociate from attachment, because sorrow is nothing but attachment. It is going to cause sorrow. All right. Now, the next two verses also we read together. Sankalpa prabhavan kaman tyaktva sarvana sheshataha manasaivendriya gramam viniyamya samantataha shanai shanai uparamet buddhyadhriti grahitaya atma saustham manakrutva nakinchidapi chintayet. Abandoning without reserve all desires born of sankalpa and completely restraining the whole group of senses by the mind from all sides, little by little, let him attain quietude by the intellect held in firmness. Having made the mind established in the self, let him not think of anything. So between these two verses, four instructions have been given. One is abandoning without reserve all desires born of sankalpa, which is sankalpa prabhavan kaman tyaktva. That is one instruction. And then sarvana asheshataha. So that goes with that. Then the next one is manasai vendriya gramam viniyamya samantata. Means control, manas indriya gramam is village, but the group. Group of indriyas, group of senses, along with the mind, viniyamya. Niyama coming from, niyama means rule or control. Visheshena means keep them under control. So that's the second instruction. Two in the first, 24 and two in 25. So one is sankalpa pravavan kaman tyaktva. And second is manasa indriya gramam viniyamya. So controlling the mind and senses, then what do I do? Shanai shanai uparamit, little by little, slowly, shanai shanai, slowly, slowly. Because see, suddenly if you try to do something, it is not going to work. So that's why little by little uparamit, withdraw. Buddhya dhriti grahitaya. Buddhya dhriti grahitaya means by the intellect, means controlling the mind by the intellect. See, we have seen, we have the chariot metaphor right on the cover page of this Bhagavad Gita. The horses are the senses, the reins are the mind, and the charioteer is the intellect. So it is the intellect that has to control the mind, or the other way is that the mind itself has to say, I'm under the control of intellect, and whatever the intellect tells me, I will listen. Either way is fine. Okay. What happens is, when you try to control somebody or something, it may not happen. But if that entity itself is willing to come under control, right? If the mind itself says that I want to be under your control, then, and I will listen to you, then that is the best. That is a very happy situation, right? Whereas in the case, intellect is saying, no, no, don't. And the mind says, no, I want to do, right? Then there is friction. So the third one is little by little or slowly, slowly, uparamed, withdraw. How do I withdraw? By controlling the mind with the intellect. Atma saustham manakritva, having made the mind sit in atma. But again, once again, atma and mind are not this thing. Na kinchidapi chintayet. So then, do not think. Chintayet here is thinking, not chinta, worrying. Worry also is a thought. So then what will happen is, there will be no thoughts. So these four instructions, sankalpa is the first word. Samyak kalpana. Sankalpa means fanciful thinking. It is born out of incorrect thinking. What is the incorrect thinking? Is that there is happiness in the objects. That is incorrect. There is happiness in the world. There is happiness in the objects. There is happiness in people. There is happiness in whatever. That is incorrect thinking, and that is sankalpa. And sankalpa is born out of shobhan adhyas. What is called as shobhan adhyas? Shobhan adhyas is adhyas is superimposition, a fanciful superimposition. See, I don't superimpose that the world has got sorrow. That I don't do. Do I do that? Do I say, oh, world is sorrow, let me stay away? No, 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 no. So it's fanciful. So it's a fancy, oh, this world will give me pleasure. You know, I'll be happy. Let me go party. So this is what fanciful imagination is. Prabhavan is rising. Prabhava means, you know, to be created. So these desires, karma, desire is created because of sankalpa. Sankalpa is fanciful thinking. How will I have a desire for something which I am sure is going to give me sorrow? No, never. Never can I have desire that, you know, like if the, I have desire only when I think that it, and thinking that the world has got any kind of joy content in it, any object in this world, for us to say that it has got joy content in it is incorrect thinking. That needs to be corrected. Okay, so once that is corrected, we will not run after it. So sankalpa prabhavan kaman tyakva, renouncing, giving up. Sarvana asheshataha. So asheshataha means any, not even a little bit remainder. Shesha is remaining. Ashesha means there should be nothing remaining. Like there should be, means like sarva means not like, oh, okay, 50% of the objects, that's okay. I have no sankalpa, but the other 50 I have, or 90 I don't have, but 10 I have. Not like that. Sarvana asheshataha. And then actually what he's saying is giving up, you control the mind. But if you really give up that wrong thinking, the mind will automatically be controlled. Understand that. It's not like you give up the desires, then you start controlling the mind. Actually, giving up the desires, automatically the mind, the more the desires are controlled, that much, to that extent, the mind will start coming under control. Okay? But he's saying slowly, slowly withdraw, he's saying. Because suddenly, now you heard this, now suddenly tomorrow, you know, we can't just suddenly do that. So slowly, slowly. That's why this is the sixth chapter. We have studied Karma Yoga and all. If we have been following all those principles by now, we should have at least the firm determination or firm thinking that there is no joy in the world. At least, you know what? Even if you think there's joy in the world, then one other thing that will help is that to know that if I am destined to get it, I will get it. So don't run. At least that will help. You know what I mean? Stop the running where we are constantly craving, I want this, I want that, da, da, da. At least that you stop. So to that extent, the mind will come under control. So if you convince the mind completely that, look, if this is meant for me, I will get it no matter what. If it is not meant for me, I am not going to get it no matter how much I run. So why bother running? If at least if that much is done, mind will come very much under control. And understand that what we are destined to get, nobody can take it away from us. Nobody. No, even God cannot now come and take away, because that has been predestined for us from our past karmas. So whatever is going to come is going to come. So don't fret it. Okay, don't run. And then slowly, slowly you try. Buddhi dhriti grahitaya. See, the intellect needs to control the mind. Intellect is the higher mind. And if the mind itself is convinced, then really the intellect doesn't have to control. Then the mind and intellect are one. Okay, so this thing. And then Atma Saustham Manakratva. So having made the mind established in the self, once again, we do not have to get the mind established in the self. The mind itself will recognize itself to be the self, because there is no difference between mind and self. So these words are used, but they should not be taken as there is two different things. There's a dichotomy between Atma and mind. There is no dichotomy. We have created the dichotomy because of our thoughts. And where are the thoughts coming from? We think they're coming from the objects, but actually the object is not capable of generating thought. Object is inert. Please remember, object is inert. If the object was capable of generating a thought, it would have created a thought in every single mind, every single person that came in contact with that object. It's like I see an ad in the paper for some movie. What ad have I seen recently? I don't even watch TV. Anyway, suppose some new movie releases and that ad is in the paper or it comes on TV. If that ad was capable of generating, everybody who watched that TV show, that ad, has to, that thought has to come, let me go see the movie. Do you think everybody is running to the movies? They're not. The object is not generating thought. We are generating thought by connecting with that object. See, now I'm attached to movies. So when I say, ha, this movie, this actor, I'm attached to him. I like him, her, or whatever. And now I want to go for the movie. And we always think that, oh, you know, if I had not seen the ad, then I wouldn't have known it. And then I would not have done it. And it's because the ad is to blame or the object is to blame. They say, no, no. For thoughts arising, only we are to blame. If we lose our interest in that particular object, the thought will never come to us. So we are the ones. And another thing, see, Bhagwan is saying control the thoughts, okay? If the object was generating thought, can I have a control over something else? Do you think I will have control over an object? If that object is capable of generating thought in my mind, do I have control over the thought, over the object? Like, oh, object, you know what? I don't want you to... No, and Bhagwan is saying control. So how can Bhagwan tell us something which is totally impossible? Otherwise, what is the point of that instruction? It's like, you know, Gurudev is giving, I know the cure for your disease. You go get that sky flower from the sky and then I'll make the medicine. Array, that is impossible. There's no sky flower in the sky. So if it is an impossible thing, Bhagwan is not going to say. It may be difficult. Yes, for some of us, it's going to be very hard, but it is possible. It is possible. And that's why Bhagwan is saying control the thoughts, because it that itself is an indication to us that I can control the thought. Otherwise, Bhagwan would not have told me. Bhagwan would not have said. Because every object, if it is capable of generating thought in my heart, how many objects am I going to control? There are millions of objects in this world. How can I? Not possible. But Bhagwan is saying, control the thoughts. So I can control the thought by uparati, by withdrawal. How do I withdraw? Is by knowing that there is no happiness content in it. Because all my life I'm trying for happiness. Understand that there is no happiness content, in the object, in the situation, in the place, in the person, in the weather, and nothing has got happiness content. Then that withdrawal will happen. And it will be easy. See, one is a forced withdrawal. That's why shane is used, right? There can be a forced withdrawal. I can, you know, force my eyes to close, force my ears, put earplugs and not hear and all that, right? But whatever is done with force, when you release the force, it will come up with double force, right? It'll spring up. But if it is done with understanding and knowledge, then it'll stay there. It'll stay in that withdrawn condition. So therefore, understanding and knowledge becomes more important. So that's why this knowledge is being given. Understand. And get firm. See, what happens is we hear it, but we don't become firm in it. And that's why the repetition. That's why it's constantly repeated to us. We are being constantly told that there is no joy content. So once we become firm in that, then these two instructions will become easy. Sankalpa prabha, then we will not have any fanciful imagination. Then those desires will not arise. What happens, I will tell you, at the initial stages, the desire arises and the desire agitates us. When we were small, when I was growing up, I was very fond of Hindi movies. I used to actually be agitated. I actually at age 18 thought that life was not worth living if I had not seen a movie on the first day or in the first week. I have gone through this. That's what I'm telling you. You think life is not worth living? My Lord. Now I laugh at it, right? But as I grew, as I matured, and then coming into the studies, now it doesn't have any effect. movies get released. I see movies, not that I don't see, but it's not like, you know, my life is dependent on it. I have to see it. Even if somebody tells me, oh, Jaya, many of my friends, they come and they tell me, this is fantastic. It doesn't even create a ripple in my mind anymore. I'm just giving you one example. There's not even a ripple, not even an iota of desire that I should go see. Like, okay, it's fine. It's a great movie. Let it be. If I'm to see it, generally these type of movies, when I'm traveling on the plane, I will see it and I say, oh, okay, somebody told me this was good. Let me watch it. So I just watch it on the plane. Right? But the point is that it is not creating a ripple. That is the main thing. The ripple in the mind should not happen. The desire will come because it is a thought. It is coming from the level of the vasanas. It'll come, but let it not disturb you. Let it not disturb you. Okay, so we will stop here at 25 today. Are there any questions?
Yeah, Ji, I have a question. This is based on you are talking about dukkha sanyoga viyoga. And not experiencing pain when we are in deep sleep. So I'm just a little confused about that, because sometimes when the pain is very severe, it can wake up the person from their deep sleep even.
Correct. Correct. What we are talking, then once the person wakes up, he associates with the body. But if that person can remain in deep sleep, so if there is a disassociation, only then. So the disassociation, as far as the body is concerned, the practice has to be right from a very, very young age that I am not the body. Okay. See, Gurudev, I'll give you the example of Gurudev. It seems Gurudev, two things that come to my mind about Gurudev is, one is he would speak, and my father has told me this, and he would, once he finished his talk, when he would step down from the stage, his whole body would be shivering like a leaf because the body was very weak. This is in his later years, right? But when he was speaking, do you think that the people even noticed that his body was like that? Or he himself, did he even know? Because you see, when he's speaking, now he has completely disassociated himself from the body. He could do it while being awake, right? We cannot. But we can definitely practice saying that I'm not the body. The body is what is experiencing pain. And one thing about it, suppose if you are experiencing pain, we are not telling you not to go take medication. Okay, that is not the instruction. Instruction, dissociate from the body, doesn't mean you don't take your Tylenol, you don't take your medicine. That is not the instruction. Okay, but don't create such a big deal out of it. Understand that you're not the body. And the what Bhagwan is saying here is that this vyoga, this disassociation from sorrow, is the greatest yoga. And how do I dissociate is dissociating from the body and the mind. Because sorrow, pain in the body is causing sorrow in the mind. Anything external is causing sorrow in the mind. It's just a thought. So that is what is meant, disassociation. Okay. That, of course, if you're in severe pain, you might wake up. Even without pain, we wake up, right? Once you wake up, then it's a physical thing. That is, yeah. But to give an example, how does dissociation happen? It actually happens every night in deep sleep. Because dukkha sayoga viyoga, is this possible? That would be the question. Then we say, you go into your deep sleep. Isn't it happening? It is happening. Mm-hmm. And it will happen in samadhi.
Yeah.
There he will transcend. The yogi will transcend all three bodies, right? Gross, subtle, and causal. So that way.
Okay.
Okay?
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Any other question? Anybody else? Okay, then we shall. Oh, next Monday, by the way, we are changing clocks, except Saskatchewan. But so Alberta is right. Fall backwards is this coming Sunday. Coming Sunday. Saturday night.
Yes, that's correct.
Okay, so 1 hour before. All
yeah,
right.
Yeah, can I just clarify one more thing?
Yeah.
You were talking about nothing will move the person when they have reached that state. Nothing can move the person. So we are talking about any sorrow in their life, no other situations can have an effect on the person.
Yes.
That is what we mean by that.
The one who has reached that state, huh? The one who has reached samadhi. Yes. Yes. Realized masters.
Okay.
Yeah. That's why Raman Maharshi, I think I've told you the example. Raman Maharshi's mother came to him and told him that, is it not your duty to look after me? I'm your mother. So he didn't say anything. She went away. Then he wrote her a letter and it was delivered to her saying that God is looking after all of us. Who am I to look after you? His own mother. She tried to, it's an emotional blackmail, right? That's what we say to our children. Will you not look after me? Will you look after me? Will you look after me? So if he would have felt guilty, oh my God, my mom, he didn't. He just kept quiet. She asked him. She told him, you're my son. It's your duty to look after me, right? And he kept quiet. And then he wrote to her, God is looking after all of us. He never got, we would have felt guilty. If our mother says that, we'll feel guilty. We'll feel it is not our duty. Why? Because we have not reached that stage. We have not reached. The ego is still alive. Mm-hmm. When the ego dies, as it happens in realized masters, they know that this world is an illusion, right? And so at least for us, we should also understand that God is the one that is looking after all of us anyways. You know, at least try and understand that much. Mm-hmm. Angela, you have not unmuted yourself. Now.
When you said that the ego still remain, is that we are still identified in this particular situation, we are the son or daughter.
Yes.
With our mother.
Yes.
So when she said that, I feel guilty because my role is not thinking about herself, but
yes,
the
I'm identified with my role as a mother or a son or a child. Yeah.
That's the ego side, right?
Yes. Yes. When the ego dies, what will happen is, I am a mother will die. I am a son will die. That thought is not there. That's why Bhagwan Raman Maharshi, he doesn't think he's a son. Right? He's not identified with the body. He's not identified with the body. So the woman that is standing in front of him is him only, not his mother. Because he's looking at consciousness. So we are one. The ego is the one that is creating a difference. I'm the son, you're the mother. Whereas he has transcended the ego. There is no ego. So he says, you and I are one. What? Who's looking after who? Who should be looking after who? You and I are one. If you and I are different, yes, I can look after you or you can look after me. If you and I are one, who's going to look after who? Right? It's very high. Very, very high. Okay. For us, that's why karma yoga, do your duty, but don't get attached. Don't get attached. Do your duty. Do your duty. Play your role to the fullest. Perfectly you play the role, but don't think you are the role. That you don't think. Know that you are the self and then you play your role. Right? Okay. We'll close now.